You want the best for your child. K-12 can help them gain the skills they need to reach their full potential while giving you the support you need to get them there. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Their state-certified teachers make online learning interactive and engaging, allowing your child to learn at their pace from the safety of home. Join the more than 2 million families who have chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more. That's k12.com/podcast.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
Hey everyone, Double G Show here. Want to bring on and introduce Zach Haydorn. It's been, I don't know, when's the last time we chatted? It's been several months.
Yeah, it's been a few months for sure. Been a few months, but man, I'm glad you had some availability today. And it's always good talking wrestling with you, man. So I'm really glad to be here.
So much so that it was a while ago. I don't even think, did you have Brass Ring Media really up and running at that time when we chatted?
I did not. It was in my brain, you know, and like kind of in the background getting started. But no, it's, yeah. So we launched Brass Ring Media in September, right in the same week as like All Out, All In, mm-hmm. that week. And so, yeah, we talked, I think it was like a couple months before that.
Okay.
So it's going strong. Hopefully you guys check it out. But it's been a wild ride since the last time we talked. That's for sure.
All right, before we get into the book, I do want to ask you about Brass Ring Media because it kind of fits very nicely into a big conversation around pro wrestling media that has been happening. It's been happening for a while, but I think there was a magnifying glass that was put on it because of the Backlash show. But Brass Ring Media, what is your goal with the brand, or with the, you know, just all of the work that you guys are doing under this one, you know, under this one label?
So our goal is to really kind of analyze and report on the wrestling business in a longer form way. So if you like listen to our podcast or check out our YouTube shows or read our work on Substack or kind of peruse any of the member only stuff that we have on Patreon, most of it is this longer form analysis of wrestling. So whereas there's other organizations out there that do a really great job breaking news and digging for news and finding news to report on, when I started Brass Ring Media, it was like, okay, you know, that space is covered and it's covered pretty well, you know, mm-hmm. it'd be kind of repetitive to just kind of dive into that space. I was like, you know, what we do best and what I enjoy most and what I think my audience and our audience enjoys most is talking about the news and talking about things that are being reported and talking about shows and talking about, you know, upcoming events. And so, yeah, we took the perspective of, okay, we're going to, you know, let everybody who does the breaking news break it. And then we're going to be there and be an arm where people can go to hear, you know, thoughtful conversation around it. So that's what I hope is our niche, whether it's written or whether it's the spoken word via like video shows or podcasts.
So you mentioned Substack, you mentioned YouTube, you mentioned podcasts, you mentioned Patreon. Like those are a lot of vehicles in order to get access to you guys. I imagine you're sort of looking at this as like a giant experiment. Like, okay, what's working? What's not working? Should we keep all of these things? Do we need, you know, does Substack work better? Does Patreon work better? Like, you know, you're very early into this thing. I can remember, you know, when we started our YouTube and stuff, just all of the you know, the failures in doing stuff, and then you learn from that. Like, where do you see the things working for you guys in this experiment?
Definitely an experiment for sure. I mean, we try things. Sometimes they work really well. Other times we're like, man, it's a good idea in theory, theoretically, but didn't work, you know, in execution. So, to answer your question though, you know, we're trying to find a formula where we can thoughtfully and strategically be where our listeners want us to be, you know. And we heard loud and clear, like when we first started, and as we were working through things, like people like the YouTube show. The YouTube shows are really popular from a live listenership perspective. We get a lot of really good engagement and really good conversation on those live shows. And so we started with one live show a week. Now there's, you know, now there's four live shows per week.
Wow.
We increased that. The other thing we heard was, oh man, I love the YouTube shows, but I'm not always in front of my computer when I'm like wanting to consume your content. So can we get a podcast version of that? And so we started simulcasting the shows, you know, from you on YouTube, and then also having them available later on to download as podcasts. And then you know, part of like the Substack channel kind of fits in like in a little bit of a different category where we can do more, some like longer form interview work. We can do show reports where we're not, you know, talking on Thursday afternoon about Monday Night Raw that was on Monday and that has already been picked through, you know, on various other channels. So this way we can just, you know, get a review up on Substack, and we've grown our audience like in a, like really successfully on Substack. There's a lot of, I think more and more, you know, creators and content creators go to that platform to increase the audience. And so that's worked really well. So it's just trying to find the mix. We're trying to find the mix right now of where do we put our time? Where do we like make sure that we can, you know, reach our audience in the most efficient ways? And so right now, like that three-prong approach of podcast, YouTube, and Substack has been the magic touch. But as you know, man, like, you know, in a week's time, something can change like that, and you know, we'll have to pivot again. So I mean, you hit the nail on the head. We are definitely trying things. It's trial and error, and the best thing is, you know, we've got an audience that's along for the ride. Our members really help us out a lot, and not just kind of being there and engaging with the work, but also, you know, giving feedback on, you thought that was cool. like, you know, you don't need to do it anymore. So
do you guys plan?
It's a big issue, yeah.
Do you guys plan to try and cover events live? Like, for instance, Double or Nothing's going to be in Vegas. Like, I don't know how many people you're working with, but like, is there going to be, you know, because that's where a lot of now we'll dovetail into this a little bit, but the idea of journalism versus content creation. Now they can kind of mix together nicely, but sometimes that, you know, they don't have to. But I look at, you know, the more successful people on YouTube, and it's somebody like a Denise Salcedo, who I love, and her stuff isn't really like, oh, here's the hard news. Her stuff is more like, oh, I get to interview Bianca and I want to get to know Bianca. And then she puts it on YouTube and she puts it in TikTok and she puts it in Instagram Reels, and she just kind of grows the audience that way. But a lot of her being able to do that is based on her building her brand and actually getting access to the wrestlers or to the people who, you know, people want to hear from. Like, do you guys have an idea for that kind of approach too? Or are you just sort of content with like, hey, you know, wrestling is a television business. We can do most of the analysis that we do just by watching.
Yeah, so we definitely want to cover shows live. I mean, we've covered a few this year already, and there's more on the docket to cover live. So I was at WrestleMania. We were at Dynasty. We're going to be at Double or Nothing. We're going to like All Out is in my backyard here. So we'll be there. We'll be at SummerSlam. So we're slowly, you know, getting the access that we need. You know, our we realized that, like, you know, we cover wrestling, cover the shows in a certain way, in our way. Mm-hmm. And I, going in, it's like, I understand that there's another way. There's other ways to cover it where you could get more views or more hits and more other things. Like, but we do just want to stay true to, like, kind of the tone that we set. So I love Denise's work too. And it's like, when we're thinking about who we want to be in the space, it's, can we do the Denise kind of content better than she can? Well, no.
Yeah, it'd be really hard.
So we have to find, like, another pocket, another niche. Right. And we really want to work hard to, like, stay in that lane so people know what they're going to get when they come to us. And so, yeah, that, you know, doesn't necessarily mean, like, are we going to get to know, you know, Drew McIntyre on a 20 minute podcast about, you know, what his career was like and what his favorite food is and, like, all, like, that's not our brand. But if you want to know, kind of, hey, Drew McIntyre is really clicking as a heel right now, and you want to spend 20, 25 minutes talking about why that is and talking with other listeners who are interested in why that is, what's happening, what has he done to change his character, what has he done to really kind of draw, you know, increases, you know, momentum as an act, like, that is where we would come in. That's where you'd come to us for that type of thing. So we try to find our lane, but we have been able to really kind of get in the door places. The folks at AEW have been great. The folks at WWE have been, great to, you know, allow another, you know, another media company in there that they don't know. We're relatively new, obviously. So, you know, we get the access we need to, but we're still going to cover the business the way we want to do it.
Yeah, no, it's very cool to see what you guys are doing. I am always intrigued at the space, and the problem with a lot of the content that I see is because YouTube is so keyword and title driven and thumbnail and graphic driven, you see a lot of over the topness on YouTube. And in order for personalities to get over, it's really about that persona rather than, in some cases, rather than what they have to say. So if you're trying to do it for real, if you're trying to do it with the story being the story and not the personality being the story, which is how we learned how to do it in journalism,
right,
or in media class, it's really hard because what you get, what monetizes on YouTube is actually the opposite, unless you have this giant channel where you've built up the subscribers and then you can kind of do some things. So it's a really interesting place to be right now in YouTube, in the space. And, you know, it's going to constantly be changing, but it does make it hard for smaller channels to cover things in an honest and sort of non, non over the top way. And so when I see guys like you, and you've been able to, you know, build up your YouTube subscribers in a short time to, you know, over a couple thousand, but in order to reach sort of the levels that you want, you're going to have to do that, right, you know, 20x or 50x. And that is a hard grind. So kudos to y'all for, you know, kind of digging in and, you know, grassrooting this thing.
Well, I appreciate that, man. Yeah. And it is, I mean, it is hard at times and it's a grind. I mean, as you know, it's not easy to stay with the curve, let alone ahead of it, you know, when it comes to, like, YouTube and the algorithm and all that craziness. And I don't know about you, but it seems like we will agree on this. It's what, you know, I just generally think that, like, if you consistently put out good stuff that you believe in, you know, yes, are there ways to, like, make sure you're in the conversation with good titles and good stuff? Like, all that is true, but the bottom line is you have to be confident about what you put out. And, you know, and I think there needs to be an authenticity there, you know, that people can connect with your content. Because even if they do catch, like, a 30 second clip of your stuff and it's like, you know, they don't buy it, they don't buy you, and they don't buy that, like, what you're doing is real, it's like, you know, move on. There's a whole line of other, you know, other channels waiting. And so I think it's really important to stay true to what you want to do, your brand, how you want to cover things. It's just like, if someone saw me doing an interview with somebody about like, again, like their favorite food or something like, like something like Denise does so well, you know, they'd be like, dude, what are you trying to do here? Why are you trying to, don't try to be Denise. We see through this. That's not you.
So I can give you a funny example. New Japan, when they first were getting really hot in the US and they were coming out to the US, they did some shows in LA, they did some shows in the Bay Area. And so New Japan invites the media to this like open space. And there's going to be talent there and you're going to do some scrums and everything. So you're kind of there and it's, you know, it's not that it's a new product in a sense, but
sure.
You know, you're drawing from different media sources. And so I'll only mention this because I think this person, you know, thought that this was great work and put themselves over. But Ryan Satin, we were interviewing Hiroshi Tanahashi. And so you're getting like these really smart questions about, you know, his, you know, this is near the tail end. You know, Okada has already taken over and Tanahashi can still go at this point. And, you know, so it's really about the mystique and the uniqueness and the long history and kind of, you know, where he came from and where he is now, where he's seen New Japan. And then Ryan Satin goes, by the way, what kind of conditioner do you use for your flowing hair? And it was kind of like a screeching sound to my journalistic, you know, it was just like a, okay, this thing is kind of about to go over the edge here. And yeah, Tanahashi's a professional. So, you know, he was, he put it over in his own way, but Ryan Satin was so proud of that question because what he knew is that it was going to eventually go viral because enough people asked the same things about Tanahashi and New Japan that this one unique thing was going to be the thing that was goofy enough to kind of go viral on Twitter. And he was right.
Yeah.
And I'm not even taking away from what he said. He was smart enough to understand, you know, I can't ask these same questions. One, because he doesn't really know. And two, you know, he knows, he understands the internet. And he understands what the virality of it is. So I that's just the example that sticks in my mind. And now we're here, you know, gosh, that was probably, I don't know if it was 10 years ago, but it was probably close to 10 years ago. And now we're here. And that is more of what I think, you know, the personalities, the wrestlers, and I think they kind of like that stuff because it humanizes them and it's not only about business. We'll come back to more media stuff because I do want to ask you about kind of where we are in the space later. But let's talk about your book because this is what we had talked about prior. You wrote a book on Stone Cold Steve Austin, and this was a passion project of yours. And I guess everything is out and people can buy it. And so your project is essentially out there for people to read.
It is out there. Yes, it is out there as of Friday. So a few weeks ago, we had our a big batch of pre-orders that went out. And once all those went out, we were able to announce it on sale and everything kicked off on Friday. And so, yeah, so the book's called Stunning, The Wrestling Artistry of Steve Austin, and you can get it on Amazon. It is a wide but also focused look at Steve Austin's career, start to finish. So we start the book in 1990 with his first match as a rookie in 1989, actually. And then we chronicle his in-ring work from that day and that match to his very last match with Kevin Owens at WrestleMania 38. So we cover everything in between. And the idea and the goal here is, and what I think we did a great job in accomplishing, is really like looking at Austin, not as like a star necessarily, not as like a big business attraction for WWE, though obviously that's part of it, but really like, what was he like as an artist in the ring? What did he do to get the reactions that he did? How did he, you know, go from, you know, guy in 1989 to the biggest star of all time just, you know, 9 years later in 1998. And I think we accomplished that, and we did so in a fun way. I like the way it's written. I like the way it's organized. We organized the book, you know, in different eras of his career. So we, you know, talk about Stunning Steve, and we talk about the Hollywood Blondes, and we talk about ECW Steve Austin, the Ringmaster, Stone Cold, of course, heel Stone Cold. We do a lot with that, you know, and then wrap up with the end of his end of his career. So it's a really like interesting, and I think, you know, one of a kind of look at the in-ring part of somebody's career, frame by frame, you know, match by match, move by move. And it's I'm proud of it. I'm really proud of it. I'm really thankful for Jonathan Snowden, and I'm thankful for Hybrid Shoot. Jonathan Snowden was the main editor on the project and a mentor on the project. And Hybrid Shoot is an independent publishing company that got behind the book and the idea. And together we put it out, and K-Thor Jensen is the artist here with the book, and you can see that right there. You know, he did the cover. We asked him to do just a couple drawings of some of the matches that we talk about in the book, so that we could put it at like the head of each chapter. And he came back with over 100 original pieces of art for the project and for the book. And so those are scattered throughout and are really cool. And he did a really nice job. And so, yeah, I'm just thankful that we got to put it out. And it's surreal to kind of see that up on Amazon. And I think if you're a wrestling fan and if you're listening to the show, you will like this book. And I hope that you give it a shot.
Yeah. And it is actually less expensive than most Kindle books.
It is. Yeah.
So it's that's got to be nice for people who are kind of like, you know, because I'm sure there are people like me who are just like, I have so many books that I right. haven't, you know, that I've maybe read 5% of, but that is a competitive price. And I will get one in my Kindle, and we'll put the link to the Amazon page in the show notes for the great podcast. But now that you've gone through this process, because I've heard people who've actually written books and they go, after they're done, they're like, man, I never want to do that again. And then after a little while, I don't know if your brain sort of forgets the whole process and how long of a process it was. Then they kind of go, oh, okay, I'm kind of ready to write again. Like what were some of the things that came out of that process for you?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely moments of that. I mean, there's no question. Like, there's moments of, wow, like, why? I can't, you know, when you get a version of it back from the editor and it's like just doctored in red and you're like, holy crap. Like, man, like, you know, you think you did a nice job writing it and it gets doctored in red. And it's obviously, there's nothing personal. It's trying to make the book better. But there is just a mental part of that game of, yeah, like, that's a lot of red.
It's like an essay coming back from a teacher and you're, yes, like, oh man, I thought this, yes, was really good.
Yeah. But I, you know, I really enjoyed the writing of the book. Like, I mean, I really did. I mean, I liked the research of it. You know, I watched a lot of wrestling, you know, obviously for it, and a lot of Steve Austin matches. That part was really fun and really like a fun, I guess what ended up being kind of like an 11-month, like, you know, 11-month span of time where like we really honed in on, and I was just writing it, getting thoughts out of my head down on paper, you know, and that was the funnest part. The really kind of challenging part came after that with, mm-hmm, editing and layout and, you know, making sure, you know, there's, you know, the margins are okay because like certain printers can, like, it was like kind of like the technical book stuff that, and the editing that really kind of made it a bit of a grind after that initial kind of 11-month writing process. So I, you know, there are just ups and downs of like, I would never do this again. And then it's like, oh, it's really fun. Like, okay. It reminds me like a little bit of like being a new dad of like, uh-huh, when you're up in the middle of the night and you're like, what is happening right now? Why, you know, why is, like, this is unbelievable. I can't sleep and this baby's not, doesn't stop crying and I'm tired and like all these things. But then, you know, somewhere down the road, you go, oh, I could do that again. Your brain forgets.
It only remembers the good stuff.
Forgets. So it's kind of like that. And it's, I would do it again. I mean, I would do it again. I enjoyed it very much. And I think there's a lot of different, you know, different types of projects that I'd like to tackle from a writing perspective. Hopefully this does decent enough business where, you know, Hybrid Shoot will have me back. I'd love to do another one and we'll see. But I had a, even though the experience had its hardships and its ups and downs, collectively, I would absolutely do it again and, you know, be better equipped to handle those ups and downs after doing it one time.
How do we get a copy in Austin's hands or in on Austin's Kindle?
Working on that. We're using some connections.
Snowden's got to have a bunch.
Yeah, we're using some connections. And I think there's a better than 50% probability that it happens. So fingers crossed on that. Fingers crossed.
Your child has so much potential, but your local schools may not be right for them. Check out K-12. K-12 powered schools are accredited tuition-free online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 2 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to learn more. That's k12.com/podcast.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
Did you think about, like, could this have been, now books and podcasts are completely different types of content and projects, but did you think like, oh, it would have been cool to do this as a podcast where maybe you have like more voices, maybe like a little bit of a narrative podcast. You could probably find snippets of some of the audio from Austin interviews if you don't use too many seconds of it or whatever the laws are for. But yeah. I see a lot of book ideas that start as book ideas and then today kind of get turned into podcasts. Did you think about that as you were writing it, or were you just uber focused? Like, I want to write a book. I've always wanted to write a book for my entire life. And I was never, you know, you were never going to, you know, deter from that.
Well, yeah, I was never going to deter from that. But one of the things, and I guess I could talk about this now, I am going to be recording companion podcast episodes to go along with each chapter and a lot of matches of the book. For Brassring Media members.
That's cool.
So Brassring Media members will be able to read the book, of course, but then also, you know, follow along with our library of podcasts that we do about the book. And we're going to go in chronological order, start to finish. So yes, it was the podcast idea was something I always wanted to attach to this since, you know, that's a big part of where my experience lies and where our audience kind of finds me in my work. So I definitely wanted to add that to it in addition to writing the book, but I never wanted it to supersede the book. I wanted the podcast piece to be a kind of companion element to it. So that'll start next week. Actually, that'll start, next week. First episode will drop either Wednesday or Thursday. If I can get the guests, you know how it is to wrangle guests for podcasts. So
yeah,
get the guests right. Wednesday, maybe Thursday, but that is going to be a part of it. And if you head over to patreon.com/brassringmedia, you can become a member and check that out along with while you read the book. I think it'll be a fun little add-on.
You know, that Austin time period, is so memorable to me because it's like like Austin and Rock's crescendo and all of that was perfect timing for my lifespan as a wrestling fan, because in 94-95 is when I go to college. So my pro wrestling fandom lessens a little bit just because of going to college, you know, social circles changing a little bit. I still kind of kept an eye on it. But if you remember what WCW and WWF were in 1995, like just the dregs of their histories. And so naturally, you know, my fandom is going to fall off. Comes back a little bit for NWO because, you know, I was a big Hogan guy when I was younger. Mm-hmm. And then the tail end of 97 and into 98, everyone can see Austin coming. Mike Tyson coming in, you know, was also big because you would actually see that on television. Like the news stations would report that Mike Tyson was involved in WWE. So at that point in 98, it's like, okay, like I'm at the tail end of school, you know, about to be out in the real world. And I kind of have time to kind of get back into it. And then from, you know, 98 through the end of Austin's run, I was just there for all of it. And if you think about like some of those shows, and obviously we have a lot to remember and to compare to today's wrestling. But let me try to think about when this was. So 2001, I'm at the San Jose Arena, which I don't even think it's called that anymore. The Shark Tank, wherever the Sharks play.
Sure.
And it's Austin and Triple H against Benoit and Jericho. One of the most famous Raw matches of all time. And I'm sitting in that arena and we're already past the peak of the Attitude Era. So this is just kind of the remnants of that. Plus you have these new guys coming in. And the sound in that building is what I would compare anything to, you know, if you're thinking about what's the loudest you've ever heard. And so even at the tail end of that thing, Austin is still drawing the loudest reactions, you know, in the tail of his run. But when you look back and you think about it, it's like it's this crystallized like 3-year period where he's the hottest guy going. And you look at today's wrestling, and if you were to crystallize 3 years of something, you're like, oh yeah, you know, the Bloodline. But the Bloodline even took longer than three years, right?
Right.
It never got quite as hot probably as that Austin run. Like nothing really does. But you know, when you're thinking about like how did this guy become the most famous wrestler, and then you look at sort of the history of it, like it really is a small amount of time. But it is so memorable, and it's almost like today's wrestling, you can't even really compare anything to it. Same with Bill Goldberg, right? Bill Goldberg's like up and then down, like in a short amount of time. But wrestling today is so much different. You don't have like the crazy peak. But I guess maybe what is comparable is like AEW's run from like, you know, 2019 to 2021 or 20, you know, something like that, where it's just this crystallized period of time. Like how is he still so remembered and still drawing, you know, WrestleMania 38, he's the main event, and it's off of 3 years. Like it's really amazing.
It is amazing. I mean, it really is. I mean, that time period, 1998, 99, 2000, early part of 2001. I mean, it just burned so hot, and then eventually it burned out a little bit. But to me, you know, when you look, there's a couple things that stand out in kind of what you were discussing there. The first is like it happens so fast for Steve Austin, where it just like all of a sudden, like bang, he's the top star. But when you really look at it, and what I hope the book accomplishes, it's like there's a lot of things that he's developing long before it gets to 1997, you know, his confidence, his relationship with the audience, like the moveset, the promo, the personality, like there's all these little things that he's stacking up, you know, in 1992 and 1993 and figuring out in 1994. And then he gets kind of like the open mic in 1995 with ECW to put some of that stuff together. So like, it is kind of like, bam, he gets there and he's just this big guy, but it like, and it feels out of nowhere. But at, when you look at the, his career trajectory though, there's a lot that added up to that moment and made him ready to kind of take that moment on because of everything that came before that. And so I hope, you know, we paint that picture well in the book. I think we did. The other thing is, you know, what is it about Austin that, you know, keeps him as hot as he is today, so many years after that hot run where he can, you know, be in a top rat match at WrestleMania 19, not wrestle again, and then be in the main event of WrestleMania 38 all those years later. What I found in like working on the book and watching as many matches as I did and like transcribing them and analyzing them as much as I did, one thing that Austin always had as part of his arsenal is a connection with the audience. And he worked hard to get it. Like that was always a key part of his match. Like, yeah, he wasn't doing always the flashiest moves in the world. And yeah, like some of his matches are, you know, aren't going to be go down in history of, you know, the five-star classics. He isn't Will Ospreay. He's not Kenny Omega, but he deployed like an artistic kind of strategy to his matches where he was going to make sure that the audience was into them and invested in them and connected to it. And I think like to this day, that goes a long way with wrestling fans. You know, they know that when you're watching Steve Austin, man, like he's into it. He's into it and he makes you invested. And he had that part of his game in 1991 and still has it, you know, in 2022 or whatever that was.
I can remember because I was reading Pro Wrestling Illustrated because they were hot on him when he first started.
Yeah.
Pro Wrestling Illustrated was covering him even though he was not in, you know, either of the big two companies yet. And I can remember when he was coming in because I was already, you know, our relationships to being sort of inside wrestling stuff kind of up and down. You would have certain radio shows that would have information. And I remember hearing that Austin was coming to WCW. And I was like, oh, wow, like I've been wanting to see this guy because I would see him in the magazines. And, you know, you heard about, you know, this guy's like how he was presented was if his career goes to path, he could actually be the next Ric Flair. Well, what happens is it becomes the next Hulk Hogan in a different way.
Yeah.
But like that's how he was as a rookie, you know, he hadn't even been in wrestling very long and he's already getting, you know, this label as an extra flair. So when he comes into WCW in 91, I'm just all over it. I'm like, this dude is awesome. You know, there's stuff with Sting there very early on. So you can tell that they have high hopes for him. And then he just, you know, there's just the Dangerous Alliance stuff where he's kind of like, almost at the top, but not quite at the top. And then he just never gets there. And then Hogan comes in and it's a much different story at that point. And he reads the room better than anybody else. So he knows, and he's got to change trajectory. So like going all the way back then, you know, we all had this vision. Those of us who were really close, we had this vision of one thing. Oh, he's going to be the best wrestler in the world. And instead he becomes the biggest superstar in the world. That whole path, it's just an amazing thing to think about, you know, going back all those years.
It is. And like you said, I mean, his hot run was, you know, 3 years long, if that. But like, you know, his whole career really, like, you know, 1990 and retired in 2002, 2003. So it's still like, it's not anywhere near like some of the guys today who are working 20, 25 years, like Randy Orton. Like it's bigger than like that. It wasn't like that, but he certainly made an impact. And, you know, it's a fascinating story. And I think we did a nice job telling it. And I hope you all out there think so too.
Yeah, no, I'm excited to check it out. So, all right. We have, you know, I don't want to keep you here too long, but I did want to kind of dig back into current wrestling because you are covering it.
Yep.
Where are you with, obviously WWE is on a hot run and they are maneuvering themselves into keeping that hot run, you know, with The Rock still being involved and the move to Netflix and just their really impressive promotional strategies. And on the flip side, AEW, which was kind of like the dandy, it was the company that gave wrestling fans an alternative and were really excited about things. And they've kind of fallen off quite a bit in the popularity aspect of pro wrestling. And some of it is coinciding with WWE sort of figuring things out. As you are covering both of these companies very closely, where do you sit with things? Are you guys writing and podcasting a lot about, you know, here are some of the things AEW is doing wrong, or how critical are you guys in covering them right now?
We've been pretty positive on AEW as of late. I mean, I think, you know, if you look back at, you know, a year's worth of shows, you know, there is definitely periods of time and pockets of time in there where, you know, we're pretty critical, and I think rightfully so, given what the product is. Recently in AEW, though, I think that one of the best things that they've done is aligned almost all of their roster, or at least the roster that is going to make up most of their pay-per-views, correctly, along with like the crowd responses that they're getting. I mean, you've got Swerve as your babyface champion. You've got Christian as like a strong heel opponent. And I think for the most part, if you go up and down the roster, like they've done a nice job of ironing that out. And I think even like 3-4 months ago, there's just a lot of muddy water as far as how are we supposed to feel about these guys? How are we supposed to feel about these top stars? You just didn't really know. Like, am I supposed to like him? Am I not? Like,
okay, can you tell me how am I supposed to feel about Tony Khan as a character? Like, am I supposed to
feel bad for him?
Yeah, I think that's what we're supposed to do, is feel bad for him getting bullied by Jack Perry. But Jack Perry's stance is, well, this guy suspended me and kept me out of the company, which kind of paints Tony a little bit as a heel, right? And then the week before he got jumped, the Young Bucks told him to do something, and he just kind of did it. Like, he didn't even really grimace or anything. He just did it. And so I think you're right in that they're really trying to put their folks in position. But because it just feels like a lot of this stuff is not super well thought out, I think there's like a lot of missing holes, because I was having this conversation with some other people on my side, and we were trying to figure out the Elite versus Team AEW. And if you look at the Elite, you have Nick and Matt, who are the first two members of the entire company, essentially. And you look at Team AEW, and none of them are pioneers or, you know, from the first year that the company started. So it's like this weird branding of who we're supposed to cheer and why. And like, obviously you and I are much closer to this than anybody else. But I go back to when the Bucks were suspended for Brawl Out. And like, I think there was lots of sympathy towards them for what had happened, and whether or not they should be blamed in this lawsuit, and they were off TV. And I go back to, remember the AEW had that reality show that they
yes, oh that? God, yes.
I and the very first episode is these dudes driving in a limo, and they're like, yeah, great to be back. It's been a little weird, but they're not telling the audience why those guys were gone. And so there's like this, it's almost like there's a layer there. But AEW's audience is a little bit more hardcore, and I feel like you could take advantage of adding the extra layers to the storytelling, but in some cases they just don't. And Tony says it's because of lawsuits and stuff, but I'm unsure with this Elite versus Team AEW. I'm assuming I'm supposed to be really angry with the Elite, but at the same time, I kind of like sympathize with them. And plus they got Kazuchika Okada, and I'm like,
Right.
Those are kind of like the baby faces to me. So I'm way too close to it to see it the way that they want me to see it. But that, I think there's an opportunity for them to really thoroughly storyline this stuff out that to me hasn't been done very well yet.
I think that you just crafted up what the segment has to be on Wednesday night. Like, they need a go home promo here from the Young Bucks that calls that out, talks about them being the guys that were there from the beginning and now being the guys that are invading from the inside because things, for whatever reason, they didn't go our way, or we don't like Tony Khan anymore, or whatever it is. But I do think they need that kind of we're gonna tell you what's going on here exactly, so that we don't have to tiptoe around the story. And more broadly, well, I think that the characters they have aligned, where they can continue to get better, is by filling some of those plot holes that you outlined. Because I think more people can see through those than maybe you and I even think. Because
I think so too.
I think the product's gotten better the last 6 weeks, but the numbers certainly don't show that it's trending that way. I think they did 642,000 this week. I mean, they continue to lose eyes, I think if you fill in some of those plot points, even if you think it's something that, we have a smart audience, they already know that, it doesn't mean don't do it. It just means it polishes up your product even better. So I very much want to second what you mentioned on that point, because I think it's important to not just for this storyline, but across the board, for AEW, that polish, when you're doing 52 weeks of TV and more, you got to have it. You got to treat it as such. And I don't think they do all the time. And I think if they did, and when they do, they reap the benefit.
So are you going to Double or Nothing?
I'm not. Someone else on the team is going, and we'll be there as an organization, as Brass Ring Media. I won't be there. Tony Khan, darn you, Tony Khan. It's always Memorial Day weekend. I've got a major family birthday that is always that weekend. So I love Vegas, but I won't Vegas be there most of these times because of that.
No. Yeah, I'll be out there. So I was just saying, thinking if you were going to be out there, then we should meet up, but you're not. You won't be there. But so WWE is obviously crazy hot right now. I know there are still folks who they can acknowledge that WWE is very popular. And I'm hearing from people who casually follow wrestling and who were much more diehard wrestling fans when they were younger. And they can pretty much keep up with the main beats of what's going on in WWE without having to follow the television as closely as we do. But there's still a pocket of fans who they just refuse. It's just years and years and years of WWE being not fun to watch. And then plus, there's lots of black clouds still over their heads with the Vince thing, the Saudi Arabia thing, they're doubling down, TKO is doubling down on Saudi Arabia. So that their business relationships with them are not going to go away. And I say that as someone who just bought the Tyson Fury and Alexander Usyk fight, which was in the middle of Rida season. So, I have, as frustrated as I may have been in the past, it's just where business is going. And so if you're going to cover it, then you sort of have to, be okay with that. At the same time, you could still call out a lot of the hypocriticalness in it. But, as someone who's been watching WWE probably for most of your life, where do you rate this current run with previous hot runs?
I mean, this is up there. I think one of the top three eras for sure. You got that Hogan era, you got the Attitude era. And I mean, the Cena era obviously is a period of time, where it's a popular product and there's still a lot of people watching it, but I just don't think it had the heat that this recent kind of 2 year period to today has had. So yeah, that's how I kind of lay it out. I mean, look, they are doing gangbuster business right now. I mean, they're selling lots of tickets. They have people that want the WWE product can access it almost anywhere, whether you have Peacock or Roku thing or YouTube, or you just have terrestrial TV, or you have cable. I mean, like, you can access their stuff. It's so easy to find them for the big events. You know, they're on Peacock. I think that's like an unheralded element to them being as hot as they are, where you have this group of people that, all right, maybe they're not going to spend $50 on a pay-per-view, but maybe they will watch regularly because they can see the big shows for $5 a month. And now that they have access at that point, well, all right, now I'll start watching Raw every week. Now I'll start watching SmackDown every week, or I'll buy some merch and we'll go to a show. And so I think that's a part of the business that I think is humming along. But really, you know, they've got some key star power. I mean, that's the bottom line with it. Not to, like, you know, be the Austin guy on the show and use that podcast, but it's true. You know, you had Roman Reigns, who you leaned on for such a long time to be like a star act. I think they took the right course with him and didn't feature him all the time, so that when they did, it felt like a big deal. And now you have Cody Rhodes kind of taking the ball and continuing to run it downfield. Totally different type of star, but somebody that people will pay to see, just like Roman. Mm-hmm. And I think that's key. And, you know, on top of that, a new creative vision from Triple H, an audience that was kind of starved for that new creative vision for so many years under Vince and Kevin Dunn. And now there's a different presentation. Mm-hmm. All of these things are happening at the same time. And I think that's just making for a kind of renewed investment and a lot of momentum for the company. And look, they've got to dodge their way around this, you know, the Vince stuff. The black clouds are there. And, you know, the process hopefully is going to play out, you know, the right way, so that, you know, the victim gets exactly what she wants and deserves. The Saudi Arabia thing is going to keep people away. I mean, there's no question. It's just going to do that. That's a decision that WWE's made, and, you know, they should be called out for it. But even those two things there aside, it's still a property and a product that people want to see right now. And I you know, I think that just like any other wrestling company, it's got to do with the talent, and it's got to do with the stars being treated like stars.
And Netflix historically wanted to be sports adjacent. They did not think that live sports was a part of their business. They want to be owners. They don't, you know, in that sense. Yep. Now, the change in their economics is that they now have an ads tier for their subscriptions that they want to grow, right? They really want to grow their ads tier. And yep. I've said this before, which always boggled my mind, but, you know, they make more money off of the ads tier customer than they do off of the customer who pays extra so that they don't have ads. So that is a market that is opportunity for them. And so they choose WWE as kind of their attempt at live sports or commercialized sports. You know, the 3-hour block of Monday Night Raw that we expect is probably going to stay on mm-hmm. Mondays. And now, you know, WWE's been early to the ball game on some of this stuff. If you go even back to the WWE Network.
Yeah. Yep.
Now the NFL is coming on Christmas. So you can imagine what Christmas is going to look like the week before WWE goes on Netflix. Now there's this opportunity where a ton of people are going to get subs to Netflix who don't currently have subs just to watch their NFL. And what is going to be plastered across that broadcast? Well, probably some WWE Raw stuff, like, hey, we got Raw. So there's just lots of great opportunities that they've created. And, you know, you just mentioned the Peacock thing. Like, I can't imagine. I mean, maybe they will want to stay in good graces with Comcast, because I think Comcast is still a tremendous company. But I would just assume that all those pay-per-views go onto Netflix, and that's a new deal for Netflix. It's a second deal to work with that company. So many great opportunities that have been created for them. Nick Khan, you know, the best hire that they've had, you know, maybe in the history of the company. So lots, you know, so many, I don't think they're going anywhere, obviously. No. And but they're going to have to take advantage of the opportunity, because I've been maybe louder than most about the beginning of this Cody run. I didn't think AJ was the right person. It almost felt like he was like shoehorned and there wasn't a long-term idea. This Logan Paul thing is kind of glitzy. It's shiny, but it also feels a little shoehorned in. But I'm imagining that we're going to eventually get to, you know, what we're going to get to with Roman or with Solo or with, you know, whomever else is coming. There's a Randy Orton thing that they could do if they want. And then, you know, to get back to The Rock. So I'm sure they have that sort of long-term stuff ready to go, but I wasn't happy with these first two title defenses for Cody. But in a sense, they can kind of keep riding this wave through the summer and then get to where they need to go. So I'm not bothered with it, but I was just like, man, you know, this is something that I really am frustrated with AEW, is like the long-term thought out process doesn't seem to be there in some cases. And it felt like that with the Cody run as well. But, you know, they're hot and they're, I imagine they're going to stay hot. They, you know, but always the downfall has just been the hubris and just been the like, we're great. You know, we got this thing all figured out. And then the creative gets bad and they're not cool anymore. So let's I hope that they can sustain. All right. Last couple minutes here. I want to go back to this wrestling media thing. Dave and I interviewed Lucas Charpio, who was in France. He was at the Backlash event, and he asked a question about Drew Gulak, and he mentioned a couple of websites as to the sources of his information, and Triple H handled that question very poorly, I thought. It sort of became a little bit of a joke, considering, you know, there's questions about how hard his job is and this and that, you know, just that kind of stuff. But that created a nice conversation. Dave talked about it. John Pollock and Brendan Thurston had Lucas on, and they talked about it. And we also learned in that interview that the PR person actually told Lucas, as after he asked the question, that it was a bad question to ask. And I think there's been some pretty good dialogue about wrestling media. We mentioned earlier that a lot of it is just really content creation now. And while you can kind of blend journalism and content creation together, there's going to be a large segment of the wrestling media who doesn't care about the journalism aspect of it. They care about their views. They care about their relationship to these companies. If they lose that relationship, they lose the ability to monetize stuff. So it's this interesting conversation that's going on right now. What did you think about all that stuff that happened?
Very interesting what's going on right now. I definitely agree with that. I mean, initially my first thought on all that was like Triple H, Paul Levesque has to handle that better. I mean, like there's just no reason to do what he did in terms of throwing those, you know, throwing a couple of news outlets under the bus, especially ones that, you know, they seem WWE as they have a decent relationship with. I mean, mm-hmm. like Fightful and PW Insider, like they're at all the stuff that WWE puts on and rightfully should. So they absolutely should be. So it was just like, you got to have a thicker skin than that. I mean, you're the face of this billion-dollar company. You're putting yourself out there with creative. You're doing the press conference, you know, like you have to have a thicker skin when you answer questions like that. So that's the first thing that came to mind. And then the second thing that I think is just interesting about the whole space based on your question, not everybody is that are in those rooms or in those scrums, or they're not all wrestling journalists.
Yeah.
Like, I know for sure. And that's not a knock on any of them. You know, we like one of my partners at Brass Ring Media, he does our flagship show with me, Tyler Sage. Like he regularly says like, yeah, I'm not really a journalist. I'm like, I'm, you know, that's not like the, hook necessarily that I'm going for. I'm not like you, Zach. I have a different take. So not everybody is that. Mm-hmm. And you have to look at each kind of source independently and try to get insight as to what they're there for. If we at Brassering Media are doing a story on, Japanese wrestlers in WWE or that were in main events at WrestleMania, right? Or in matches at WrestleMania, and we were at the scrum, and that was our big story. Well, we're going to ask a question about that because that's the story that we're there to cover.
Yep.
You know, and so that doesn't mean we're ignoring other big issues. It just means that, like, we're there doing the job that we're supposed to be doing per, you know, the reason we're there. And so there's just, I think that there's so many just different elements of what, you know, media is. And I think that now includes, you know, wrestling journalists, but also content creators and everything in between. And so not everybody has the same agenda. And I think Triple H in that moment, you know, I like, aside from having like a pretty thin skin, also just kind of dismissed that notion of, hey, not everybody's here for the same reason. Not, you know, not everybody's here for this, the story, you know, there's a lot of different ways for wrestling media to represent itself in 2024. And I think it behooves not only people on Paul Levesque's side of the mic, but on our side too, to recognize that everybody's got different objectives.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing that you just said, because when I can think back to being in press conference rooms for MMA, which is mostly where I have the experience of being in those rooms. I want to actively avoid the pro wrestling ones because I don't want to be part of the song and dance. Like, for instance, I've given out this example before, but for Double or Nothing, I think it was 2 years ago. Obviously, Dave Meltzer has access to Tony Khan, and Tony Khan wanted to do an interview that day. We've done a few with him, and so it was like, okay, just keep your day open. And then that was the same day that MJF decided to no show the meet and greet or whatever, right? So already we're thinking, okay, angle alert, angle alert, angle alert. So then Tony Khan is like, keeps pushing off this interview, and so Dave is telling me like, yeah, you know, he says, you know, in a couple of hours. So then we just kept checking back in with each other. And so this thing gets pushed out to like midnight or 1 a.m., I think, when Tony was finally available. And I was like, this is nonsense. We're going to be sleepwalking through this thing. So anyways, that doesn't happen. And then in the opener of that match, which was Wardlow and MJF, Wardlow kind of crushes him and beats him very quickly. And then we have this airplane story. And so they created an event of what is MJF doing, right? So then you go to that press conference, and I think Dave's first question was about MJF, and Tony's like, I can't talk about that. And at that moment, I was like, you just wasted all of my time this weekend. Like, that's how I personally took his no comment answer. I was like, you wasted my time. Now, he didn't actually waste my time, but I didn't want to be a part of the show, right? I have a friend who, you remember when Jericho hit the water bottle with the bat?
Yes.
And he hit somebody? That's a friend of mine.
Oh.
And that person was now sort of a part of the show at no inclusion of his own. He's just sitting there at, you know, it just waiting to ask questions like everybody else. So when it, you know, when it becomes part of the show, that's where I kind of am like, my journalistic tendencies tell me that is the space that I need to avoid, not something that I need to kind of lean into. So anyway, all of that being said is I just kind of pull myself out of that. But your comment about what your beat is and asking questions in that beat, you got one shot, right?
So yeah, you have one shot. Yep.
If you took that one shot and you were like, hey, Drew Gulak, and Triple H was like doing his jock, you know, locker room shtick about, you know, bullying the people that he wants to bully, then that's a wasted opportunity for you. Now, if you didn't have that story, if you didn't have the Japanese wrestlers at WrestleMania story that you were writing, maybe you were writing about Drew Gulak, then that question and Triple H's answer actually gives you
much space to
write about everything, right? And that's why Triple H's answer was bad, because the person, now I don't, you know, Lucas was asking a question, I think, because he thought it was an important question and wanted to ask something that actually had some teeth to it. But if your story was really about the Drew Gulak thing, that answer gave you so much stuff to write about, and it's the opposite of what Triple H would have wanted to do. And so that's why his answer was bad. And that's why I think, I don't know if Nick Khan thinks about it this way, but if there was a Nick Khan, if Nick Khan could kind of duplicate himself and give him a little bit more of a wrestling mind, Nick Khan is so savvy with the media that you wouldn't have that same problem that you have with Triple H. So I think your assessment of Triple H's thin skinness is right on. And he's so close to it. And he comes from that mentality of, right, you know, protect the business at all costs. And like, cause I'm reading, I read through Steve Kern's book, his second book, which is really good. And I think we're going to interview him at some point. I'm also reading a different book by Dean Silverstone, who's Cauliflower Alley Club, and just really old school. And like, just the mentality of those guys, you know, protect the business at all costs. And you would think that in 2024, we're kind of beyond that, but no, like that is still his instinct. And it's unfortunate because WWE is going like this. And I think that mentality is going to stop some of the possibilities of continuing to grow. So just my, you know, I'm glad that you mentioned that, because I thought that was a very valid comment. All right. You have a book that's out. You have a website, all these really good things. Congratulations on getting that out. Where can people find you? Where can they find all of the Brass Ring Media stuff? Get your plugs in. And like I said, I'll have a link to the book in the show notes as well.
Thank you so much for having me, man. I really appreciate it. It's always a blast to talk with you. You guys can find the book on Amazon right now. It's called Stunning: The Wrestling Artistry of Steve Austin. It's available now. You can get it as a Kindle edition, e-edition, or as paperback. They're all shipping out pretty darn quick, so you won't have to wait too long at this point anyway to get your copy. Would love for you to try it out. Would love to hear your feedback and your thoughts on what you thought of it. You can find me on social media, mainly on Twitter, X, Zach, Z-A-C-K _ Heydorn, H-E-Y-D-O-R-N. Got, you know, just Twitter stuff, man. Love talking to people, love engaging with people in the right way. You can also find, you know, plugs for other stuff that we do at Brass Ring Media and a bunch of other stuff with the book. So Zach _ Heydorn. And I hope you give us a shot at Brass Ring Media. We've got you covered kind of on your day-to-day pro wrestling analysis, current event based. We're live on YouTube Monday through Thursday, twice on Thursday, actually. We have a late night show that goes live late Thursday night. So you can catch us there with different hosts, different perspectives, different show styles, but it's all there on YouTube. Just search Brass Ring Media YouTube and you'll find us. Subscribe, hit notifications. If you can't listen to us on YouTube, all of our live YouTube shows you can get as a podcast. So wherever you get your podcast, you can download us. Just search Brass Ring Media and we are there. Our written works on Substack. And finally, if you want to become a Brass Ring Media member and get bonus everything as far as Brass Ring Media goes, we have a free member podcast, pay-per-view review shows. We've got a Discord community where all our members hang out, talk wrestling and talk life and just, you know, shoot the breeze with one another. It's a blast. You can become a member on Patreon, patreon.com/Brass Ring Media. It's only $4 a month to do that. And starting this week, Wednesday or Thursday, the first companion podcast for the book will drop. I'm really excited to do that for members. So yeah, that's a good opportunity to do that. If you forgot everything I said about Brass Ring Media, Brass Ring_Media on Twitter. We pretty much keep that thing locked and loaded with everything that we have going on. So I appreciate all of you. And thank you, man. It's been a blast.
You know, 10 years ago, if we were doing this and I did it like actually 2008, you would go to get your domain and you would go to WordPress or whatever, and you would build out a website as like everything. Nowadays, you have your Substack for your writing. You have your Patreon for the bonus stuff. You have your YouTube feeds. You have your podcast feeds. It's just like so many different solutions for, you know, for what you want to do. And it's very interesting the way that that has evolved from like, you have to have your domain. You have to have like your home, your website, and your .com, because that's where the value is. And it's not really, I mean, a lot of the websites that were built, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago, who still have that, you know, that memorable domain. Yeah, those are fine, but it's just the new way of doing things. You know, it's not necessarily go get your domain and host and X, Y, and Z. Like, there's so many different solutions to what you're trying to do now.
There really is. And yeah, it's hard, like for the website thing, it's just hard to crack, you know, because there's so many websites that have owned the space. You got to, as I said at the top, you got to find your own kind of spot. And, you know, we're starting to find ours, but it certainly be great to have all you on board. So,
all right, man, thank you very much. I'm glad we were able to do this. We will do this again on any of the other places that I do shows. We're going to have to bring you back to We're Live, Pal, as well one of these days.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'll be there. Yes, whenever
all
you
right.
need me, man.
So, Zach Haydorn, Brass Ring Media. I am Double G. We'll see you when we see you. Peace out.
Just like backyard barbecues or a day at the pool, the Three Rivers Festival has always been a part of our summer fun. And the festival returns July 12th to the 20th. It kicks off with the annual Three Rivers Festival Parade. Browse art in the park with local artisans. Bring the family to Children's Fest. Stroll through Junk Food Alley. And don't forget about the festival concerts at the Hoosier Lottery stage with live music from nationally renowned acts. You can buy your concert tickets or check out a schedule of events at threeriversfestival.org. Don't miss the best summer experience in Fort Wayne, the Three Rivers Festival.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.